Oh, welcome to Left Out. Left Out is a public affairs program on WRCT 88.3 FM that discusses the news from a perspective left out of the mainstream media. I'm Bob Harper.
I'm Danny Slater.
And today's program is produced by Dan O'Neill. Listeners, as usual, are welcome to call us at 412-268-9728, 268-WRCT, or you can also send electronic mail to bob@leftout.info.
So we have one announcement today. I'll just mention that in case you're not aware of it, I encourage you to listen to Democracy Now! Every morning at 8 o'clock on WRCT 88.3. It's a nationally syndicated program from produced in New York. The host is Amy Goodman, and it gives you a news from a different perspective. It's on 8 a.m. every weekday on WRCT. So the first topic we have today is a guest named Dave Tessitore, who has been a community activist in Pittsburgh since the late 80s and has been involved in the Southwestern Pennsylvania Regional Planning Commission, the Citizen Advisory Board. He's worked on ethics in government. He's worked on open government initiatives. And we just want to bring up some topics that he has a lot of knowledge about. And of course, you're welcome to call us at 412-621-9728. So maybe we should start with, what do you think we should start with, Dave? You have a lot of things to talk about, the transit issues in the transit system.
Upcoming elections,
The mayoral elections.
The mayoral election is
libraries.
Right. There's the – well, we can talk about the transit briefly.
Why don't we summarize for our listeners what's been going on in the news with Pat?
Well, the basic thing is that there's not enough money. And so what has been happening is there's the threats of huge cutbacks. And unless there's more money that comes forward, I've sort of been a little bit counter to some of the more progressive or liberals have been saying, because I've been insisting that it doesn't help if we don't get more accountability to simply throw more money down the drain. It's very important that we have transit, but it's also important that we have good and accountable transit. And so one of the proposals that we've made with the that's, I understand, being considered by some members of the Senate is that we look at what was done in California for their solution to both accountability and transit funding.
Where in California?
The state of California and also in San Diego area. Now, what I had been involved with a number of years ago was challenging the waste of the money that went into the airport busway, the so-called airport busway, the link that goes from Corliss to Carnegie. And when we were challenging that in court, I happened to talk with the president pro tem of the California Senate for 30 years. At that point, he'd been retired, but he was the person who started the whole idea of light rail in the United States in San Diego when he set up the system there. But prior to that, even, he had been involved in setting up the dedicated funding, which they scream and yell about around Pennsylvania all the time as they keep looking for different ways to come up with money each year. And what they did in California is they extended the state sales tax, as in Pennsylvania, it was not covering the sales of gasoline. That's a gasoline tax that's on there. You go, you pay the $2 or $1.97 a gallon. You don't have a sales tax slapped on that. And that was the same in California. So what they did is they extended the sales tax, which is on the oil that you buy, to the gasoline that you buy, so that those monies would go toward operating transit. And in the outlying counties where they didn't have much transit, they could also use some of that for roads just to get enough votes. That established a constant funding, regular funding that did not have to be redipped into each time or et cetera, and currently is creating over $1 billion a year for transit in California.
So there's a proposal before the Pennsylvania State Senate regarding these ideas.
Well, I wouldn't say it's before the Senate. I would say there are senators that are I understand considering this, that this has been put. The idea has been put before the Senate leadership and to the Transportation Committee. Now, what Senator Mills did in San Diego that was different is that, as he, in his own words, he said, we had a bus company here. We knew it was always going to be a bus company, much as our Port Authority pretty much is. And we knew no matter what we did, it would never be able to handle rail effectively. So we set up a separate company. And then over top of that, we have what's called the MTDB, or the Metropolitan Transit Development Board, which oversees both of them, telling them where they have to go, when they have to be there, what they're able to charge, and then it also plans any new construction. Aside from that, rail and buses are entirely separate. They operate as two different companies, and they do what each does best.
So what would be the benefit in our area of rail has been pretty much ruled out or not been promoted at
right.
all. What are some examples of lines that you see would make sense to put should be putting rail in?
So if we instead in Pittsburgh would split the rail away, we would have the opportunity, instead of putting an orphan line in as to the South Hills, to utilize rail. For example, there's the Allegheny Valley Railroad, which wants to extend rail all the way up to Oakmont. There's rail lines running out through the Mon Valley. The rail could be connected to the airport. Back in the mid-90s, when we were actively working on this, we were proposing a rail connection, which would have been 10 minutes from downtown to the airport terminal. That could still be done. All of these things, but you have to have a rail focus. Let the bus company be a bus company. Let PAT operate the buses. Let the rail operate the rail lines. Put it in as regional rail serving the outer counties, and then set up the dedicated funding so that they can operate. But just doing the dedicated funding would allow the Port Authority, not having the legislature looking at it, to even dip below the radar and continue its mismanagement even more so than it has been.
So you think there should be a rail instead of the busway from downtown to the Shadyside area, that should be a rail line?
Originally, that was rail. That was four lines of rail, two of which were used for commuter rail, and certainly could have been at much lower expense than what they are now. The same money used to extend the rail out through Edgewood could have been used to convert the entire system to light rail. Light rail is much more efficient. The efficiency breaks at about 15,000 riders per day. They say they have about 30,000 rider trips per day now. So, it's well beyond where it would be more efficient being in rail.
And then they have instead of the pollution and the noise as well, other advantages.
Quieter, comfortable rides, et cetera. But that's just one of the things that's been sort of slowing things down in Pittsburgh, where we've been doing things backwards. The biggest problem that we have in southwestern Pennsylvania, where we have a continuing decline in population, is that we have a subsidy for real estate speculation, which is undermining the viability of our communities.
And this is the tax increment financing? Or?
That's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one of
Tell
them.
Tell us more.
Well, there's many of them. One of the biggest ways is through transportation. For example, back in 1994, the long-range plan for the region was falsified in order to misdirect the transportation monies coming in, $25 billion worth of money spent over 20 years. That was all the federal monies coming into the region. It was falsified to specifically misdirect 40% of that, or $10 billion, into new construction designed to open up more farmland to encourage more suburban sprawl. Now, the new study just came out recently. They were talking about it on public broadcasting. Locally, the Brookings studies identifying that we have the highest rate of sprawl in the country, and yet we're the only metropolitan region major of our size or larger that is
shrinking in population.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The city of Pittsburgh right now is losing population about 10 times faster than the county, which is losing population faster than the outer counties are gaining. And as this is happening, we're subsidizing the construction of new housing, which is undermining all the existing housing. Unfortunately, the local officials don't seem to understand that it's not like spontaneous generation. They used to think if you stuck a bunch of rags in a corner that it would spontaneously generate rodents. Well, we know that's not true, and yet they haven't figured that out with housing. The fact of the matter is that if you have four houses and three people, you got one vacant. If you build a second house, an extra house, five houses, and you move one of those people out of those three that are occupied, you have two more. You know, so this whole process is you start creating more and more vacancies.
So yeah. Most recently we have more housing development on the south side, for example.
have it all
part of the Southside Works.
Yeah. All over the place, whether it's subsidizing the housing for the affluent in Nine Mile Run, $100,000 to $200,000 per unit of public money is going into that in order to deliberately draw the affluent market. They're not for anybody else but the affluent,
yeah,
to draw them out of existing neighborhoods. Now, who's best able to maintain their homes in the existing neighborhoods? The people who have some money to put into it.
Right.
And drawing them out of those neighborhoods is going to then push down all of the other neighborhoods that are having
it. So people who might have had a house in Point Breeze or East Liberty or Highland Park say, hey, I can move to this brand new place over there. And
McMansion and Nine Mile Run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another place is the Frick Park development. There's a Frick Park development.
Well, this is the one that's right next to Frick.
Right next to the tunnel.
That's called Somerset.
Somerset, right.
That's Nine Mile Run there.
Yeah.
And then Hare's Island was the same thing. There was about $75,000 to $150,000 or $175,000 per unit went into that.
Maybe this is a tangent, but when they did the waterfront, it's just these big developments. That one isn't so bad because it's actually close to the population. It's close to the city.
Mm-hmm.
But what really
struck
me...
But on the other hand,
there's a zero-sum game because every dollar that's spent over there in restaurants or whatever is a dollar that's not being spent
in
Squirrel Hill or some other place. And so it's not actually generating... It's not like an industry that actually generates wealth for the region.
Exactly.
You're just moving jobs around and moving the money
around
and it doesn't actually add anything.
It's investment musical chairs is what it is.
But even as bad as that is, at least it's in the city or very close to the city.
Well, in
you
that
take the one out there,
but it's not helping Homestead. They're not getting any money out of it tax wise, and yet they're still having to pay for the services
because they
it's TIF.
The deal, the word of the TIF.
So maybe you should explain about tax increment financing.
That's an interesting subject.
Before you launch into that, let me mention to our listeners we're talking to Dave Tessitore, who's a political activist here in Pittsburgh. Your listeners are welcome to call us at 412-268-9728 or send mail to bob@leftout.info. Go ahead, Dave. Tell us about tax increment financing.
Tax increment financing is a method by which you as a property owner have your property listed as the collateral for the mortgage of the person who's building something, and you have to pay it off. Because what happens is a bond issue is fronted for a public bond issue. The money goes to the private speculator. The speculator uses that for his project. He gets easier funding from his private sources because any loss is already covered by the public if there's going to be anything. That's his profit. So what happens is over a generation or two, sometimes the 18 to 30 years, that has to be paid off. Now, what he does is they call it tax increment financing because instead of his paying his taxes like everybody else is paying his taxes, that money goes into the payments made, but then a portion of that goes to pay off that bond, to pay off his mortgage.
Right.
Now, who's covering his share of the services that he should be paying for? The general public. So whether or not you say that you as a general member of the general public are paying off that mortgage directly, or you say he's paying it off, but then we're covering his expenses for being here, it makes no difference. It's all in the same pot. But you're paying his mortgage and you're covering a large portion of the expenses. And what's happened is the people who you're paying that for have moved out of properties that we're paying 100%.
Right.
And somewhere along the line, because it's a musical chair game, okay, so there's somebody who's had a nice house and they moved in to this other project and they left that and somebody moved into theirs and somebody moved into theirs. And so somewhere along the line, and it tends to be the depressed neighborhoods, get left more and more empty.
Mm-hmm.
And so we start pulling these chairs away, going in and having to tear the stuff down and throwing away some construction, which is excellent and better than anything that's being built. What they're building now, a lot of it is just a slab with sheet metal studding and cardboard walls with some gypsum in between the cardboard. And they're thrown up with a design that's about a 30-year life. And they're tearing down housing, which, if rehabilitated, would create jobs locally. Because When they do the new construction, they do it block wide. They do multi-block areas of cookie cutter stuff. And what? Who puts it up? You don't have the local neighborhood person working on that. You have a contractor coming in from out of state, oftentimes bringing in out-of-state workers. They're throwing all this stuff up, and then they're gone. They've taken the profit and gone. Now, they're not. The local guys are sitting there just looking at it. And whether it's low income or moderate income or what.
But let's go back. Can I just be a little more concrete about this? So is the bottom line that you get it very complicated. I'm not being critical, but it's a complicated way of saying it. But more simply, basically, the developer to build new houses or to build new businesses like the waterfront are getting a huge cut off the taxes they ought to be paying.
Right.
And so we're footing the bill, basically.
So we're financing that.
We're financing them to build these things.
And reducing their risk enormously.
Reducing their risk.
Encouraging them to move in and move on. Move to the next tax increment funded development.
Yeah.
Like on the south side, and as Dave is pointing out, it's a zero-sum game. Money just shifts around. Stores in Squirrel Hill go empty, for example, because of Homestead. Now the south side work ramps up. Stores in Homestead will go empty and so forth.
Yeah.
And it just seems to be ridiculous. It doesn't seem to accomplish anything.
But it undermines the effectiveness of the region and the efficiency of the region, and is one of the reasons, and I would contend that the Allegheny Conference, which is the one that's pushing this, basically, their rule is why this region's going down. It is not because we had the steel industry, which failed. It's not because we had industry here, because there are other communities around the country which had even a stronger
undermining of their.
They had even more reliance upon steel. Chattanooga, Tennessee, had a much stronger reliance upon steel, the steel industry, than we did in Pittsburgh. And when it collapsed, they were hurting pretty bad. But they didn't ask the questions that were being asked here. Here they were saying, who do we want to attract, and what do we need to do to get them to come here? And they kept saying that over and over and over again. And that's been their guiding principle. Not the people who are here, but who outside the tent can we get? They're using carnival tactics to try to get people in the tent. Chattanooga didn't ask that question. Chattanooga asked, who do we have here? And what do we need to do to take care of us? And that was their guiding question, and that's what they used through all of their policy.
Yeah.
And when people saw that elsewhere, they said, hey, that's a neat place to be. And so Chattanooga's been booming.
So one comment, the Monfayette Expressway, that's part of this $10 billion.
Exactly.
That was basically based on a fraudulent study that was done about how useful it was going to be. To build this,
the falsifications which occurred to the long range planning to misappropriate $25 billion.
So which document was falsified and by who?
Well, what it was called the long range plan. It was the master plan for everything.
Written by who?
At the time it was called SPRPC. It's now SPC. Those stands for Southwestern Pennsylvania Regional Planning Commission. That was the entity of six counties that did the transportation planning. It's now called SPC, or Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission, and covers 10 counties. And what happened is that in the early 90s, there was a piece of legislation called ICE-T, sounds neat, which dealt with all the transportation federally. And that required that there be an actual planning process done. So they had all sorts of projects to encourage all sorts of sprawl on the table, and they wanted to get these things through. So instead of doing a real planning process, they backwards engineered it to see what would they have to have, or what would it have to be saying in order to guarantee these projects that they already had lined out. Now, it's stupid, it's bad planning, but actually that was legal.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that when they did the planning process, they also did some modeling to show that there was a justification for this, that there was going to be enough people here that they could say that it was okay to do this sort of stuff. And using wishful thinking, they came up with some numbers which even then did not show that it was justified. So the head of the agency, his name was Bob Kokonowski, ordered the staff to change the numbers, to cook the books. And the staff, having some scruples, decided if they bumped the numbers up higher than were actually necessary to get what he wanted, when they did the environmental modeling, it would throw everything out. And it worked, except they weren't the same crew that did the environmental modeling. So then the people that were on the environmental modeling crew went through and through a series of falsifications over a period of years, falsified them as a cover-up for the initial falsification.
So when you told me the story a couple of days ago, I said, well, where's the media in this? Where's the Post-Gazette in covering this really huge story, it seems to me?
Oh, it's huge.
To our region, it's billions of dollars. It's fraud.
It's been undermining because the sprawl and the inefficiencies of our traditional and existing communities has been dragging down everything. It is. It's the underpinning.
So where's the media? Why aren't they helping out with this and expose this thing and try to, you know, deal with it?
Well, the Post-Gazette has been a big pushing force for suburban sprawl and real estate speculation and subsidies for that. We have seen some criticism of urban subsidies from the Tribune Review, but Richard Scaife's son, David Scaife, who has twice as much money as Richard, he got it the good old-fashioned American way. He inherited it, too. David Scaife, I understand, is the largest landholder in Washington County. So the Tribune Review seems to be quite in favor of subsidies for more suburban sprawl, but not for helping the cities. We have had little bits that went into the city paper when Rich Lord was the news editor, and some things maybe in Pittsburgh when it was around. Paul had put a few things in. But by and large, any coverage of these things, there was a little bit in the Pittsburgh Times, a little article at one point, but it really gets pushed
because
to the back.
They're all part of the same. They're all somehow connected to the same.
Yeah, this connection is called the Allegheny Conference. This was an agency that was set up during World War II to control the region as a corporate government. Okay, it's about as close to what Mussolini laid out as a corporate state in his plans as is possible. The big difference being that they've excised out violence. They don't shoot people to get them out of their homes. They serve them with papers. They've replaced violence with patience. And so they will serve them with papers, and you get served enough. Most people eventually give up and leave, except in the East Street Valley they didn't, and then they send the armed guards and take them out. But the Allegheny Conference was formed to create to reinvent the region, to force change upon the region, and basically it's been a cultural cleansing to get the working class out of there. Now, who was the Allegheny Conference? It was set up by Richard King Mellon, H.J. Hines, Edgar Kaufman, you name the big money that was there, and the heads of the corporations, and they set it up. That's who it was. And their mode of operations were to use their economic influence to bully anybody into going along with and having a single voice and no dissension.
Yeah,
and they moved to take over and change things.
So you're listening to Left Out on WRCT. We're talking today to Dave Tessiter, who is a founder of something called PANDA, the Pittsburgh Area New Direction Alternative, and we're talking about a number of issues in local government. Listeners are welcome to call us at 412-268. What is it, 9728? We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back with Dave Tessiter, and we'll be happy to have your calls.